Well, our Old Testament lesson this morning is one of the most familiar parts of the Old Testament, known to all kinds of people, many of whom that don't know that's in the Bible, to be quite honest with you, the Ten Commandments. I'm not quite sure where they think it is. But when you tell them it's in the Bible, sometimes they're surprised. People who know something about the Bible tend to put it in Genesis. I'm not sure why, but it's well known. And the Ten Commandments are sometimes described as the base of Western jurisprudence, which I think is doing violence to both of those, and a bunch of other peculiar things. And so we could talk a lot about Ten Commandments, but we're not going to. Instead, we're going to ask, what about it? And that's a sermon title. What about the law? Well, there's a couple of very interesting things that happen in our New Testament lessons. And in John, we read that the Jews demanded of him, of Jesus, what miraculous sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this? Which is the kind of thinking that Paul talks about in our Corinthian readings, where in verse 22 it says, Jews demand miraculous signs and Greeks look to wisdom. Well, if you want a miraculous sign, God himself giving you laws in the form of 10 words and writing them on stone tablets should probably do, I would think, sort of forever. And I think one of the things that Jesus is reacting against in much of his ministry, and Paul alludes to here, is that this stream of religiosity that keeps wanting miraculous signs will believe you if. And there's all kinds of problems with that, not least of which is that it puts you in the position of controlling what God's going to do, which is at best unwise. And it also suggests that God is only going to work in ways that are instantly understandable to us. Well, God has worked in ways that you would think would be instantly understandable to us all through history, and it hasn't seemed to have made a lot of difference. When Jesus came, he came to the Jewish people who had been visited by the miracles of God, by miraculous signs, over and over and over again. And they just didn't get it. Paul talks about this need for miraculous signs. And he's talking there about Jews, but I think it's a much larger picture of that stream of, as I said, religiosity that says we want God to act in these ways, and then we will believe him. The flip side of that that Paul talks about is Greeks look for wisdom, which is that other sense that says that a particular kind of religious person is waiting for some kind of miraculous sign to demonstrate that everything is behaving the way it should. And then another group of not particularly religious people are looking for wisdom. They're looking for human cleverness. They're looking for all these other things that will make life make sense. And Paul says, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. And think about that for a moment. The crucifixion of Christ, the central act in God's work of redemption, aggravates everybody, if you want to look at it that way. For Jewish believers, the notion that Messiah would come and then die was just beyond ridiculous. It wasn't even worth considering, which is why it was such a shock to them. Because they had worked themselves into a particular framework of interpretation of the Old Testament that said, Messiah is going to come and do this in this way, and if it doesn't look exactly the way we want it to, then it just isn't. It's something else. And for people to suggest to them that the crucified Christ was the answer to everything was a stumbling block. It wasn't quite a closed and locked door, but almost. It was something that they couldn't get past. When you think of a stumbling block, there's all kinds of things that come to mind. Usually something fairly small. I think in this particular case, the stumbling block was about as big as one of those pews. The kind of thing that you just, when you walked into without seeing it was there, you just really walked into something and were taken aback. For the Gentiles, this whole notion that God would come and then allow the created order to kill him was likewise just absurd. Like, it was just foolish. It made no sense to them whatsoever. And if we're looking for, or if we're looking to the law as a lens through which we will understand the redemptive act of Christ, it's going to be really hard. Because when we look at the law from a human perspective, what we tend to see is almost a cause and effect kind of thing. Do this and that happens. And that's just, and it's simple. It works itself into a very binary kind of way of thinking. It's what leads us into, as it says in the Old Testament, an eye for an eye. This quid pro quo, this happens, that happens. Except for the crucifixion, it doesn't work that way. If we're looking at the notion of redemption from the Gentiles' perspective, the Greek perspective of wisdom, dying doesn't make a lot of sense there either. Because how do you teach somebody when you're dead? Well, obviously you don't. If you are going to be talking, as Jesus does often, about having life and having it to the full, that knowing God the Father through him would create this a life of meaning, a life of all of the things that we want that make life worth living, some of which are even tangible things. As Jesus says, anybody who's given up anything for me in this life will receive so much more in the next. Jesus isn't saying that we live a life of communication or communion with God that's just the life of the mind. He's talking about the physical world in which we live also. For someone to say this is all going to happen and then allow themselves to be crucified is kind of foolish if you look at it from just that limited perspective. Paul comes back over and over again in all kinds of his writings to the central nature of the cross and how problematic it is. And if we're not careful, we'll look down our noses at those people that Paul is writing to and saying, well, they just don't understand it. Which is true. But let's make sure that we don't think that we understand all of it either. There's all kinds of things that Paul is talking about that are still stumbling blocks to us and foolishness sometimes too. We want the benefits of the law without the responsibilities of it. I was talking about that last week, that we want law because it's easy. But the problem with the law is that nobody can keep it. And even if you do keep it, it's still not enough. If we want to have a relationship with God, Jesus says, you do that through me. That the relationship with God is formed through a relationship with Jesus. It's not through what we do. It's who we are, as we are in that connection and in that communion with God. I don't want to dismiss the Old Testament because Jesus didn't. But what Jesus did is talked about how he came not to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law. In a very real sense, to transcend the law. To help us see that what the law was trying to do was to get us to a point where we would understand what was happening on the cross and not look at it as a stumbling block or as a foolish act, but instead to see that the cross was the ultimate exhibition of God's love for us. One of the things that the law does is it highlights our own inability to save ourselves, because it highlights the holiness of God that is fundamentally beyond our ability to achieve. I remember when I first started thinking about that and how powerfully it struck me that the holiness of God is fundamentally beyond us. It's not just that we need to work harder. It's an order of existence beyond us. We just can't achieve that level of holiness. We simply cannot. There's nothing that we can do as people. We could live a perfect life and we still would not achieve that level of holiness. But when Christ came, and lived his life as a teacher, as an example to those around him at that time, leaving stories that are examples for us as well. But then went on the cross and took upon himself all of those things that make it impossible for us to achieve that level of holiness. He opened the door for us in a way that makes no sense to people who are religiously oriented towards saying that if I do this, that will happen. And in a way that makes no sense to people who think that if we just get smart enough, everything will work. Jesus came to demonstrate that unless God reaches out to us, we will never be able to reach back to God. And when he came, when he lived, and more importantly, when he died, he transcended the need for law. He transcended the need for wisdom and moved everything into a love for people that reached out for us, that said, move into a relationship with me. And when God looks at you with judgment in mind, he sees me. He sees Jesus. Because what Jesus did on the cross is he absorbed all of that. He took all of that upon himself. All the sin that had ever happened, that was happening and ever will happen. And for those who are willing to move into that relationship with God through Jesus, we too have transcended the requirements of law and the requirements of wisdom to reach God, because those are both insufficient. It's easy to see how the cross is a stumbling block. It's easy to see how people would consider it foolishness. But Paul writes in verse 25, "For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength." If you stick that in any other religious tradition, it becomes a koan. It becomes a proverb of paradox to teach you that life is meaningless or something. What it does here is it reminds us that God understands that fundamental difference between him and us. And he created the way for us to be in communion with him. God, through Jesus, is the one who erased that wall, who closed the gap between his holiness and our existence. The relationship that we have with Jesus is what makes all of this work. Stumbling block for some, foolishness for others, but for us it's the power of life itself. And what Paul is telling us here is that we can have this relationship. That it's not based on what we do or what we know, but it's based on who we know. And if it's a stumbling block for some, that's okay. And if some people find it foolish or at least hard to understand, that's okay too. Because the way God works doesn't always make perfect sense to us, because he's God, not the other way around. For the foolishness of God is wiser than our wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than our strength. It's something that gives me comfort, and I hope it does for you as well. And that in this Lenten season, as we ponder what it means and what it meant for Christ to come and live among us, that we will know that what it means to be in relationship with God through Jesus, beyond law, beyond wisdom, but entirely coming from the love of God for us. Amen.